I would like to add another little analogy to the analogies I used in my message just heard. What do you think the reaction of the media would be, even though they clearly despise as much as we do the gross distortions, the sewage on the American brain, the abuse and slanderous assassination of figures across America in the throwaway, sensational National Enquirer, Star News type pulp crap that is gorging America's newsstands with their abuse. Rarely a public figure will go through the agony and the pain and the terrible expense of fighting back. Multiplied millions are being made through the peddling of lies and sensational distortions. Purveying under the freedom of speech and freedom of press rights such insanity as so-and-so raped by extraterrestrial character and has frog-eyed child. I'm sure thousands of you watching me read the junk. Some of you read it to see how far extreme they can go, which is exactly the same reason that some of you watch the extremists in religious television. There's one on religious television, he tries to follow me around, that makes such horrendous faces that someone anonymous sent me a hilarious tape in which a phenomenon which is the result of gas in stentorian tones and at different melodic notes synchronized the facial expressions with what in secret is normal relief. I think I meandered through that adequately. There are people who watch phenomenon like, and this is not the person I have in mind, but when Ernest Angley used to be on TV, they used to watch him to see what kind of freakish expression would go next with his peel. Comedians watch him to get material. And there are some of you who read these pulp paper things for the same reason. And there's hardly a way to fight back. And I believe that the respected newspapers of America and even television media at times must want to vomit that the very same First Amendment that gives them the right to publish their newspapers or express their television programs allows such crud to be circulated. And millions are made by it. Multiplied millions. Far more than a Jim Baker makes. Preying on the defenseless exposés, which are not real exposés, are false. They're malicious libel in most cases that push the boundary to the maximum. That under the First Amendment, they are not responsible. They are seeing how close to the limit of legality they can get, and their budgets are such, and the dollars that are made are such, that they pay the price of the occasional person who can take no more and spends half a lifetime savings, sometimes all of it, trying to fight back. You let a headline appear, government focuses its attention investigating the throwaway, sensational, trash news media organizations of America. And you see how quickly the respected newspapers group and fight back, even though they know they're fighting for dirt. Because they have the common sense to understand that the price of freedom is association with nuts. And that if they sit silent while the trash conveyors are selectively crucified as a class, those same crucifiers, having gotten away with that, will next attack the opinion newspapers who do not engage in trash but express controversial opinions. The analogies go on and on and on and on. It just so happens that a brainwashed American public doesn't like religious TV. It just so happens that a brainwashed American public doesn't want religion coming out of its little square boxes. Interesting book, Inventing Reality, The Politics of the Mass Media by Michael Parent. For many people, an issue does not exist until it appears in the news media. How we view issues, indeed what we even define as an issue or event, what we see and hear and what we do not see and hear, are greatly determined by those who control the communications world. Be it labor unions, peace protesters, the Soviet Union, uprisings in Latin America, elections, crime, poverty, or defense spending, few of us know of anything except as they're depicted in the news. Even when we don't believe what the media say, we are still hearing or reading their viewpoints rather than some other. They are still setting the agenda, defining what it is we must believe or disbelieve, accept or reject. The media exert a subtle, persistent influence in defining the scope of respectable political discourse, channeling public attention in directions that are essentially supportive of the existing politico-economic system. The Bill of Rights was written not for the majority. Not for the existing politico-economic system. The Bill of Rights was written to protect the minority. Freedom of the press doesn't even need the First Amendment anymore. They're powerful enough to get their way, entrenched in America now. If there was no First Amendment, they have the ability to elect. A government that would protect them with laws. They don't need a First Amendment. The fact that it's there, they'll fight for it, saves the trouble of using their power and wasting it to protect their rights. It's already there. And the reason they can protect their right is they control the media. Now, the world view, one of the reasons that money is such an issue, and most Christian religious personalities have been such fools, and why I've fought them for so many years and called them fools long before the media started doing it, but I called them fools with specificity. Most of the religious personalities did not have the guts to teach religious stewardship. They wouldn't come right out front and say, a Christianity that does not have stewardship as a fundamental cornerstone of its teaching is not Christianity. They didn't understand it themselves. Jesus talked more about money than he did about heaven. And by far the majority of his parables dealt with stewardship. The root of sin is rebellion. The fact of sin comes out in the lists that only deal with the symptoms rather than the cause. Man does not want to recognize the earth is the Lord's, the heavens the Lord's, and the heaven above the heavens is the Lord's. If you were of the world would love his own, but you're not of the world because I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. The Greek word is cosmos for world. It had nothing to do with geography. It has to do with mindset, frame of reference. The world views everything. This is mine. Christianity is a startling metamorphosis of the viewpoint where you suddenly come to realize everything is the Lord's. And you act on a permissive grant and a promise of blessing with the condition precedent of the recognition of the Lord's ownership testified to by the tithe. Now, I had a lot of people listening to me until I used that word. Then immediately the defenses go up, which proves my point. And Christians not teaching the tithe and not teaching stewardship in television have attempted to raise money with the charitable purpose of piggybacking on doing good deeds and buying the world's viewpoint that the church can only justify itself by helping the poor and feeding the hungry and doing good. Church doesn't have to justify itself. The right of the church to exist is in the First Amendment, the same as the right of speech, assembly, and press is there. You don't justify those things. The government must justify questioning those things. The world would like to get the church brainwashed into believing it must justify its right to exist. You don't have to justify your right to exist any more than you have to justify the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You don't have to help the poor, otherwise you're not entitled to pursue happiness. Helping the poor may be a worthy act, but it's not a condition precedent to life. You don't have to get up every morning and announce to your family, I do not have a right to live today unless you tell me somebody poor I can help first. You have a right to live. Indeed, people who take your life are the ones that don't have the right. Well, the same right is there in this country for the church to exist, for your religious expression to be free. You don't have to justify it. Those who try to take it from you are the ones that are the criminal, violating the highest law in the land, but they have so brainwashed America that Christians are on the defensive. You must somehow justify. And then there are the crooks in religion who figured out you can make money with orphans and distended bellies and starving kids and piggyback on them with administrative costs. Well, what happens is if the Christians try to get charitable dollars, you come into competition with charitable foundations. The world looks at the marketplace of givers the same way as they look at the marketplace of any other source of revenue. There are only so many charitable dollars out there that can be motivated by charitable causes. And the market views the charitable marketplace, or the world views the charitable marketplace, as a field to be harvested just like any other marketplace. And competition exists. The survival of the fittest usually rules the marketplace, as we're now seeing. The church was not fitted to survive in that competitive frame. You're sure not going to get the Catholic dollars. They have taught right for years. The Catholics have taught, as on so many things, they're right. That the church is a better judge of where the charity should go than you are, so you give your dollars to them, they decide what the charity is. The right way in this country with its pluralism is for churches to stay out of charity. Except they do it the way we do it. If you're going to raise money for a charity, don't touch the money. Don't manage the money. Just give your time, energy, and expense to the raising of the money, but let the money go directly to the charity, like we did for the Save the Books. You wrote your checks to Save the Books. Didn't see my name on the canceled side of the check. We never touched the money. Or you just give to charity, like we did to the Southwest Museum or the Rose Bowl Aquatic Center or the USS Pasadena to help the crew. Or to an orphanage and don't talk about the individual orphans and try to use them to raise money. What you give to God had nothing to do with charity. But because so many of the religious TV guys were raising money for charitable things, they came into competition with the great foundations. You need to analyze the stockholdings of the great foundations and charitable institutions in the major networks. And then you'll have enough insight, if you've got any brains, to begin to figure out that as it began to be trumpeted, how many millions and hundreds of millions of dollars were being raised by these religious television personalities who were raising it for charities that they controlled and thus were able to skim the administrative costs for. That's so many hundreds of millions of dollars that if that competition were eliminated, in the marketplace view of things, returns is available to the more powerful charitable institutions in America. universities, giant trusts, giant foundations. These are the people, and they're respected people. They do good work. I'm not quarreling with them. I say, raise money for these charities and use the established foundations. Churches don't need to be engaged in something. They're not tooled with the number of centuries the Catholics have had in the same activity. I believe only in raising money in a church organization that are tithes and offerings as testimonies to the value of God, the laying up of treasures in heaven, the giving of that which is already the Lord's. Don't ever let the end justify the means in a religious organization, finding some emotion-laden project in order to raise money from people who would not give because they value the teaching, would not give because they value the truths they're hearing, would not give because they recognize the truth, the earth is the Lord's and the tithe is the Lord's, would not give because they accept the right of God Himself to say that the portion that is His, that you have as a trustee that never belonged to you anyway, goes where He says put it, namely the storehouse where you eat your spiritual food. There are 1,000, maybe 10,000, maybe tens of thousands who would not give for any of those reasons. They're wrong, but they would never give for those reasons, who can be motivated by a crying child, a starving child, an orphan, boat people in Vietnam, a roof on a church in Cambodia, a tear-jerking story about missionaries and orphans, a food for the hungry, a Bibles to Russia, that will be motivated to give for those things, that would never give for the stewardship reasons just named. The tithe is the Lord's. Where I'm taught, I'm going to give material things to show the value of it and release the Spirit as promised in Galatians 6. Giving is Philippians 4, that fruit might grow and abide in heaven, laying up treasures in heaven, properly stewarding the tithe that belongs to the Lord that He said is to go to the storehouse where you get your spiritual food. Never would they give for those reasons. Why should they? They don't believe Him. I don't fault a person who's honest enough to disbelieve that. He doesn't believe that. He's not going to believe the next thing I'm going to say. They're going to hell. But what difference does it make to them? They don't believe it. That may be less true, but they don't believe it. If the churches had had the courage to teach God's way of giving and not get involved in stewardship, they wouldn't be as vulnerable as they are now. Not get involved in charity, rather. But because the easy way to get the money was to build buildings and let them put their names on bricks, start projects that always cost more than the amount of pledges that are paid, and create the snowballing problem of having to come up with another problem to pay a project to pay for the last one, exploiting charitable tear-jerking projects as the source of giving, thus trapping themselves totally in designated giving, that in order to pay the operational costs and the bills of airtime and salaries, etc., they have to take administrative costs off of these charitable activities. That's what's got the church in trouble. And without knowing it, it got them into a competitive field of the big leagues where they were competing for a set amount of dollars. Charitable giving is a set amount of dollars out there because people are giving what they consider to be their money. And they've got to be motivated to do that. And it puts the church in competition in the survival of the fittest field with people that have been there longer and have more power and connections to do them in. So like tigers waiting for the first mistake, these fields of power find the weak one. But the attack is on a class. A class that for years did not distinguish between a television evangelist, a television pastor, a television teacher. A class that did not allow the distinction for many years between those who teach stewardship as part of proper religious expression and those that were just tacking God onto a con game that is as old as human nature and in no way justified by the scriptural arguments of stewardship. But what it has grown into by all of those mistakes is what I said in my message today. An all-out, invidious, class-based discrimination against any religious voice on television because the power of this media does not allow an independent source that's free and gives you an alternative. I'm not sure that the motives of all the newscasters are consciously wrong. All I know is they're not controlling the source. I've said this probably 1,000 times. There's a crash of a plane in New York. Sort of gruesome, but you maybe would like to see how the different news people treat that subject. So you see it on ABC and you'd like to see, you know, maybe the cameras on NBC were a different angle. So you try to go, oh boy, I've seen this on NBC, now let's see what ABC has to say about it. You have the hope that NBC puts it in the first 10 minutes, maybe CBS will put it in the last 10 minutes. Ah. Same stories, same time. And you try to tell me with the pressure to get that news ready every day that that isn't indicating a controlling source somewhere behind the scenes? Don't be stupid. They invent reality. They make issues that don't exist. Be this as it may, growing numbers of people are becoming increasingly aware, inventing reality. The Politics of the Mass Media by Michael Parenti. I said Parent earlier. Parenti. There seems to be a growing number of people increasingly aware that the media are neither objective nor consistently accurate in their portrayal of things. There seems to be a growing understanding that we need to defend ourselves by monitoring and challenging the misinformation we're fed. In this book, I will try to demonstrate how the news media distort important aspects of social and political life and why. The press's misrepresentations are not usually accidental, not merely the result of the complexity of actual events and the honest confusions of poorly prepared reporters. While those kinds of problems exist, another kind of distortion predominates, one not due to chance or to the idiosyncratic qualities of news production or news people. The major distortions are repeatable, systematic, and even systemic, the product not only of deliberate manipulation, but of the ideological and economic conditions under which the media operate. this book was copyrighted in 1986. That's 3 years ago. How many of you in this room, get a camera, raise a scan. How many of you in this room have ever read this book or heard about it? Hold your hand up. One, over here to my right. Hold your hand up. You that know about this book and have read it, keep them up high. One, over here to my right. Over here. Get the one hand in the room. One hand in the room. Somebody help with cameras. Can't even find one poor lone hand. Now swing around. How many more hands do you see up, folks? Go on around. I mean, you know, I got a room full of people here. One hand in the room, come to me. Two. Two hands in the room. Been around since 1986. Sort of a losing cause, isn't it? I mean, it nails the media for deliberate invention of reality and creation. Instead of reporting the news, they create it. They invent it. They select. I told you, I cannot stand. If anybody has any doubt about how I feel about Jim Baker personally as an individual, then please stick around and listen to my message as it replays. But I can't sit silent without pointing out how many days and nights did we get a verbatim report while the prosecution side was telling the evils that Jim Baker did. And I told you when that was happening, you would not see a similar coverage when the defense began to present Jim Baker's side. And I pointed out Friday night, at least in Zsa Zsa's case, I like Zsa Zsa. Come on, I like her spunk. We come across her in the horse world all the time. She has the guts to get on a horse and ride it. And that's no small accomplishment. I mean, I like the bite of her reaction. I mean, at least we're getting something to match the Hemsley trial in New York to entertain us. When they played films of her using some of those F words that she said earlier she didn't use. She quite tartly says, "Well, I learned it from your wonderful Beverly Hills Police Department." I like that kind of response. I'm on Zsa Zsa's side. I'm quite sure that she was a handful. But any cop with an ounce of brains, cops always deal with you on what they call the attitude test. They don't treat you the way the law says. They have a big subjective margin that they call the attitude test. Anybody with an ounce of brains would know when Zsa Zsa stopped, you better walk on eggs. I mean, she didn't gain the reputation, the blonde bombshell, Hungarian bombshell for nothing. Anybody. Don't you know that if she came to my church and showed up, my ushers would be instructed to walk on eggs? You say, "Well, I don't think that's fair. Why can't your usher treat everybody alike?" Because everybody ain't alike, stupid. Where'd you get that stupid idea? Doesn't mean you let her break the rules. Doesn't mean you don't enforce the law. It means you recognize going out the gate that this situation is pregnant with accidental overkill that would get out of hand. But there are some cops too stupid to figure out that they don't have to prove to every person they meet that they're the law. There are some people who carry a crusade. It's an attitude homogenizer that everyone must be reduced to the same, prostrate on your knees position. I admire the cop down in Long Beach that trapped him. I admire the black cop that knew that if he didn't take a proper, humble posture, he'd get abused. And he knew that, and he set the Long Beach police up. Good for him. Because there are those that have a class-based attitude that they must somehow one-up certain people that they think have gotten away with rights that in their little pea-brain subjective view, they're not entitled to. Anybody should know. Zsa Zsa Gabor is not above the law, but she's Zsa Zsa Gabor. I don't really think it demeans the Beverly Hills Police Department too much to show a little respect. What we had was a collision of two people that didn't have enough understanding of the right of the other one to have respect. Just that simple. A cop who has to prove to Zsa Zsa she's going to, to use a cop phrase, they're going to worm her like anybody else if she needs an attitude adjustment. And Zsa Zsa, who expects any man wearing a badge or not, if she tells him what a glorious hunk he is, to be a little nicer. You have the Haman tendency. That's all it is. Mordecai was willing to respect the position that the king gave to Haman. He just wasn't willing to bow to him. So Haman had to make him bow. Now, to continue my message, all I'm really saying in all these analogies is there is a class-based animus crossing the land against any true Christian who still will remind the media, the government, and the world, we bow to no man. We bow only to God. We will respect any man. We bow to no man. And the issue is, as I said when I used to preach on Haman and Mordecai, and it's about time to preach on it again, the 75-foot scaffold was not to kill Mordecai. He'd be just as dead at 7 feet. The 75-foot scaffold was to make a point far beyond killing Mordecai. It was to chill and create fear as the preliminary prospect to absolute subjugation of all who would not bow to that which conflicted with their faith in God. Do you really think that the news is reporting on the so-called sex priestess here in California, in Los Angeles, and showing her picture and that of her husband or man or whatever he is, who to qualify to be the priestess must have sex with 2,000 men? Do you really think that that little tittle in the so-called constitutional trial, in which they are using sex, or rather using religion as a defense, qualifies for the coverage we're getting in the local news? We can save the most important building in the city of Los Angeles. Restore one of the great library treasures of the city. Lead a telethon to save the books, the first of its kind in history, where every dime went to the books. And he'll get a line in the local paper. Because it's someone religious doing something good. What's even more important, a free voice that flips the bird at them if they get out of line, which said line is the Constitution, is doing something good and they're afraid that the world will find out about it. But some people with an off-color animal sacrifice religion from via Haiti can have connections to the kidnapping of the kid down across the border from Brownsville and dismembering him in human sacrifice, the Santeria people, and they can show pictures of a overweight tub of lard defending the need of animal sacrifices for their religion, or this woman who must ding 2,000 men in order to be the high priestess and give them spiritual counsel. That's front page stuff. Because it creates suspicion as part of this invented reality against religious people who do anything but token wave at it, who really have a faith. What can I do? I told you. Do it God's way. I'm the only one out here that's been telling you these things and teaching giving the right way, and I did it long before the crisis came along. Keep my voice free. At least I can speak for you. Buy yourself a television satellite dish until you know you'll hear the free voice. And quit putting it off. The days on commercial TV of a free voice are numbered. And the numbers are running out fast. If you can find another voice doing this, support it. But let's quit mincing words. There isn't any other voice doing it. So get on the telephone and talk to me. Bob Crescenta, pastor, I have a book called Manufacturing Consent. I'll see if I can get you a copy. I have a copy, so thank you. I'm glad you're reading books like that. Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Give them hell, Doc. I'd like to know where or how the ACLU stands on this attack on Christianity and why they're not doing something about it. ACLU, quit being a civil liberties union many years ago. They're a carefully selected civil liberties union now. They only fight for the civil liberties that have popular support. The only time they ever get on the side of religion is when it's some freako sect, that it's impossible for anybody to think that they might be getting religious themselves. That means you want to smoke peyote as part of your ancient Mexican Indian religious practices. They'll get on the side of that. They ain't going to get on the side of anything that Christians themselves should unite for. Canoga Park, Doctor, this is my very first time ever watching you. I'm very impressed with you. I'm sending you $200 in the mail. Could you explain a King's House? Yeah, they make a commitment to watch at least once a week and support, period. So you're halfway there. You're watching now and you're starting to support. Just a means of identity. Louisville, Kentucky. Since I started watching you, I get no sleep anymore. I come home from work and watch you all night, but it's worth it. My mother, here's the name, went to Bible college with Dr. Scott. She says he's the smartest man alive. Well, probably not, but I'm glad you feel that way. I hope it strikes terror to the heart of my enemies. Now, the treatment of Jim Baker as the largest news story of the year did not deserve the treatment. It doesn't even come close to the savings and loan scandal in America. And I hate Jim Baker. I'm not one of those hypocritical Christians that says I love him. I hate him. I hate cowards. I don't love him. I hate him. Reluctantly, I've come to like Tammy because she's got some moxie. Still don't like her singing, but I hate Jim Baker. But he doesn't deserve the attention. The securities crimes of the last year, much bigger stories. I don't even think the Hemsley woman deserved the news that she got. She just wouldn't play by the rules of the establishment and flip the bird at him. And she should pay for her crimes. But it's not that big a story. And I think an objective news media would indict the government for its false promises, and an insightful news story would point out that the very same logic that lets the government pay informers and let the end justify the means by such activity is the same logic that justifies guaranteeing a certain immunity and peace to Marcos and his wife as long as they stayed out of the Philippines as the price of getting him out. All the evil that he did in the Philippines would not have been matched by the bloodshed and the destruction of the Philippines if it had been allowed to run the course of Vietnam and the price that was paid to get the dictatorship out there and a few other places. We broke our promises to the Shah, which said promises were given as the price of getting him out. Sure got a lot, didn't it? And the Shah and all of his evil have killed as many people as the Ayatollah sent to the war front and to the battle zones and the fight with Iraq. We broke our promises and thus have made it impossible to negotiate a peaceful abdication of a dictator and the practical realities of life by not keeping the promises with him. But all the news tells is the evil that he's done and refused to tell the evil of broken promises. Look, God sent a famine on Israel and a plague to destroy him because of a breached promise. Made and conceived in treachery by the men of Gibeah. I stood in front of 130,000 people in a Confucian temple in Kaohsiung, Taiwan, invited there by the mayor of the city and the Third World anti-communist rally that they took us to. Invited us to and paid the expenses. Telling the people of Taiwan that some of us in America still believe that there is a payday that comes for the breach of agreements made. We broke our agreements with Taiwan. And when the Chinese government decided to get down to business, whatever we gained from them was easily ignored in the scenario in their great square that's now almost forgotten from the news. Do you really think that the constant parading of Jim Baker is more important than showing us that student that stood in front of the tanks in that Chinese city? You really think the evil of Christians is greater than the evil of the corporations that still do business with South Africa and China? They selectively carry on this crusade. The Guardian, June 1st, 1983, had an article by David Armstrong, 10 Stories the Media Didn't Tell. The news is slanted not only in what it says, but in what it leaves unsaid. Every year, Project Censored, a panel of media critics, including such notables as Jessica Mitford, Ben Vogdickian, Noam Chomsky, Nicholas Johnson. Household names, aren't they? Real group of notables. How many of you know those people as well as Dan Rather? Those that didn't listen very well probably perked up. They thought I was talking about Jessica Hahn. News is made that recreated individual more famous than these notables. Well, they should do, they should pose for a Playboy or Penthouse or whatever that woman's magazine is. Then we might know them. The news would tell us about them. Or gain religious priesthood by Dingin 2000. That's front page news. The media critics are not going to become a household name. They pick 10 stories that the media have kept from the public every year. Among the unreported stories in 1982 were that the U.S. cast the only dissenting vote in the U.N. on a resolution endorsing a treaty to outlaw nuclear weapons. Two, that some leading U.S. corporations did extensive business with Nazi Germany during World War II and had been sympathetic to that regime. 3, that nearly all the chemical fertilizer used in recent years, amounting to $2 billion a year, was found to be worthless by researchers. Again, that the reform legislation inspired by 20 years of civil rights struggle, supposedly guaranteeing equal access to jobs, housing, and education, was largely dismantled by the Reagan administration without significant media coverage or public input. Again, that the nation's largest laboratories responsible for testing the toxicity and carcinogenic qualities of products performed fraudulent tests on chemicals used in deodorant, soaps, medications, and pesticides. The project itself, Project Censored, its panel report was almost itself entirely ignored by the commercial press. How many of you even knew about it? Let me see your hands. How many in here knew about it? Nobody. Not one. Well, I can't see for the camera, but if the one who held up his hand that he read this book doesn't know about it, he skimmed the book. So probably there's one in here that knows about it, because I'm reading from this book, Inventing Reality, The Politics of the Mass Media by Michael Parenti. There's some saying, well, is that book available? Well, we're going to find out, probably out of print. I'll find out. If it's available, we'll have it in our bookstore next Sunday. If it's available, we'll try to do a little ad on it. You can buy it from Dolores Press. Not from the church, but from a tax-paying subsidiary, Dolores Press. Stories like this, they leave out. Jim Baker's sex life. Now, that's big news. That's really important. They know Jim Baker's sex life's not important. What's important is to discredit Christianity and create suspicion in general against the class. Well, now I wonder what Scott's doing in his secret life. It's got a lot more class and style than what Jim Baker did, I'll tell you that. But it ain't none of your freaking business. The only thing I'll guarantee you is a little bit of sins mixed in. All biological functions work. At 60, I can still tie my shoes and other such gymnastic acts. Anything else you want to know? None of your business. I ain't like the rest of them preachers. I don't piggyback on charitable activity. You give here for the teaching I do. You pay what you think it's worth. If you think it's cheap, you're stupid. I'm on a crusade to create an appreciation where it's lacking and give opportunity for the appreciation to be expressed by people with good sense. But I'm telling you, the days of such a voice on commercial television are numbered. That's why we said satellite is the future of our ministry. Go buy a dish. Quit being a cheapskate. It should be as important to you as a car. More. You can arrange transportation. There's no other way to guarantee the free voice. Quit being dilatory about it. And make your commitments for the month as a protest against those that try to deny you your rights. Now get on telephone. Petaluma. Doctor's an article. International Harry Schultz letter. It's a newsletter. And reports that China is getting away with murder. First in Peking, some 2,000 people were killed. Now some 50,000 by secret executions of those who sympathized with the pro-democracy demonstrations all over China. The press is quiescent. Our leaders look the other way. Business first, democracy second. You think that that isn't a bigger story than wimphead Jim Baker? There's no desire to topple the dictatorial reign in China. There's no news stories about the tens of thousands of travelers who lost their deposits, the thousands of travel agencies that went under because of deposits paid for China trips that went down the tube. A lot more than people who lost anything trying to get a free 3 days in a hotel in Charlotte. La Crescenta, King's Dish, 53:14, the answer is yes. And in Washington. Watching a few days. Friend told me about him a year ago, and I bought this dish to watch him. I believe it was worth every penny. He's taught me the word. I thank the Lord for him, and I've been blessed by him. I'll be tithing because of what I've been taught. The music's not my favorite, but the teaching is great. It's not my favorite either. My favorite's classical. But nobody that listens to the music thinks I'm a TV evangelist, and that's the point. I'd rather be a lily in a garbage dump than to be a frog in a Japanese tea garden. Figure that out. You got the message. Would Doc Scott be interested in an 1888 Martin Luther Bible in German? Does a bear like the woods? Commercials. I'm still reading from Inventing Reality, The Politics of the Mass Media, Michael Parenti. As they self-righteously sit there and use Jim Baker, who is a caricatured distortion of Christianity that never should have existed. But as I said over and over again, the Price of Freedom Association with nuts. You Christians that were too delicate to support me are the ones that supported him, made him what he is. You know, the gutless Christians who criticize me remind me of the gutless Americans and media and Congress that criticized George Patton while he saved their life. Christians mislead people on TV. Let's try this. While the media self-righteously looks out at you and condemns, commercials do not announce a product's price. nor accurately represent its size, weight, and dimensions. On the contrary, such features are intentionally distorted by tricks of staging, such as special camera angles and lighting, and by tricks of wording such as, quote, family size or, quote, economy size. Product descriptions are vague and ambiguous. Ingredients, for example, are rarely mentioned, certainly not by generic name. On the contrary, they're often deliberately disguised by invented terms, quote, pain reliever, quote, anti-wetness spray product, quote, cough suppressant, quote, sleep remedy, quote, germ chaser, and so on. Food and candy are described as chocolatey or peanutty, glossing over how much real chocolate or real peanuts are used, if any. Breakfast foods are described as yummy, never as sugary. Nothing, honey. Who is it that produces products advertised on television? Often remains a mystery. Brand names are stressed, but not corporate ownerships or affiliations. It is a rare television watcher who knows that the company producing Twinkies and Wonder Bread is owned by General Mills, that Creative Playthings is owned by CBS Inc., that White Cloud and Charmin, toilet paper rivals on the air, are both made by companies which Procter & Gamble owns. For what reason does General Mills, a food and agricultural conglomerate, sell toys, while ITT, an international conglomerate that once specialized in communications, sells food? Commercials do not tell. And while these commercials run, day after day, week after week, month after month, the programs supported by these misleading commercials are carrying on a merciless, unending attack on the mind of America to create suspicion of everything religious on television. What can we do? Support me. Now, one of those hypocrites is going to say, is that why you did it? Absolutely, fool! Yes! I want to wake up America to support me so I can still flip the bird at them. Night and day, 24 hours a day. I mean, how clear do I have to be? The reformation has to start somewhere. Who would you support in Luther's day? If you wanted an English Bible, who would you support? The Bishop of London or Wycliffe? Or Tyndale? Get off of it. If you believe in what I teach and you believe in what I'm doing, then put your money where your mouth is. The media chooses what it wants to blow out of proportion. I doubt that any story has ever received the coverage of the downing of KAL-007 last fall, 1983, sure proof that the Russians are the most barbaric devils since Attila the Hun, so that we must place Pershing missiles in Germany and step up the war against Nicaragua. The densely printed New York Times Index devotes 7 full pages to the atrocity in September 1982 alone. In the midst of the furor, UNITA, the freedom fighters supported by the U.S. and South Africa, took credit for downing an Angolan jet with 126 killed. There was no ambiguity. The plane was not off course, flying over sensitive installations. It was simply premeditated murder. The incident received 100 words in the New York Times, no comment anywhere in the media. I doubt any of you in this room even know about it. Everybody knows about the KAL jet. The KAL jet, there was a defense. It was off course. I'm not justifying it. The Angolan jet, there was no defense. It was premeditated murder. We didn't hear anything about it. This is not the only such case. In October 1976, a Cuban airliner was bombed by CIA-backed terrorists, killing 73 civilians. In 1973, Israel downed a civilian plane lost in a sandstorm over the Suez Canal with 110 killed. There was no protest, only editorial comments about how, quote, no useful purpose is served by an acrimonious debate over the assignment of blame in the New York Times. 4 days after this event, Prime Minister Golda Meir visited the U.S., where she was troubled with no embarrassing questions and returned with new gifts of military aircraft. Contrary to recent falsehoods, Israel refused to pay compensation or to accept any responsibility. In 1955, an Air India plane carrying the Chinese delegation to the Bandung Conference was blown up in the air in what Hong Kong police called a carefully planned mass murder. An American defector later claimed that it was he who planted the bomb in the service of the CIA. None of these incidents demonstrate barbarism as far as the news is concerned, and all have been quickly forgotten. There's another agenda behind the selective overkill in certain news subjects. Jim Baker is not on trial in a trial that is worthy of the coverage. And the selective reporting of the prosecution's case and the ignoring of the defense's case, I think, personally, he ought to go to jail. My personal opinion. I thought that before the grand jury ever convicted him and said so publicly. But Jim Baker is not the issue. He's the excuse to beat us to death on the private agenda, which is to beat down Christian voices on television. The news commentators who become icons in America, worshipped as opinion makers, don't have to prove their character and honesty. They're not selectively investigated. They have the rights any other citizen has. Be charged individually and have the case proved before they're investigated. There is a selective prosecution and by the media, an anti-Christian voice on this media, because it's the only alternative to the managed opinion of those who control the media. Why is Tylenol poisoning of several people by a deranged individual or individuals big news, but the death of many more persons from unsafe drugs marketed by supposedly reputable companies not news? Why is a plane crash killing 43 people headline news, while the far more sensational story of the industrial brown lung poisoning of thousands of factory workers remains a suppressed story for years? Why does the press rapturously report the Pope's endless trips abroad while ignoring the involvement of his priests in the struggles for freedom and for the world's poor until the Pope attacks them for such involvement. Why are unsubstantiated government charges about Soviet chemical warfare treated as top news, while the telling refutations by scientists are suppressed or slighted? I've been telling you the answer all day.